The Parents Show on 92.6 FM Radio Verulam.
Neave Solicitors are proud to sponsor The Parents Show. The friendly team at Neave's includes specialists who can guide you through all the legal ups and downs of family life. Visit neavesolicitors.co.uk. Neave Solicitors, your complete legal solution.
Welcome to The Parents Show on Radio Verulam 92.6 FM. I'm Lydia Elgory.
And I'm Shirley Heyman. Now, reading is such an important part of every child's life. And most of us adults, you know how to read, all but at different levels. But do we know how to get the most out of reading to and with our children? What's the right environment for our children to read in? And how often should we correct their reading? Do we? Should we? How do we make it fun for them? Well, tonight we're going to try and answer some of those questions. And we're going to be speaking to Claire Shanahan from the Book Trust about those questions and find out about what her Book Trust or the Book Trust she works for has to offer.
And we didn't have to look very far for our second guest on this subject because Shirley, who is sitting opposite me, our wonderful co-presenter, is an early years expert and a devoted parent rolled into one. So we'll be picking Shirley's brains later in the show about how to integrate a positive reading environment into your home for your children and how to get the most fun out of reading with and to your children. Because I think there's an important distinction between reading with your children and reading to your children.
Absolutely, yeah.
So, and we'll be speaking to local author Dawn Finch about her new book, Brotherhood of Shades. So tonight we're talking about books, and the first port of call had to obviously be the Book Trust. So Claire Shanahan is joining us now on the line. Hi Claire, how are you?
Hi there, I'm very well, thank you.
Thank you very much for joining us on The Parents Show.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Now, tell us, let's just cut straight to the chase and say, what are your top tips for parents when reading to their children?
Well, I think the main thing for parents reading with their children is to, first of all, make time for it. You know, make time every day, even 5 minutes. It doesn't have to be a big, long, arduous chore. And secondly, it should be fun, really. So that comes right from, you know, selecting what book you're going to read together, right down to where you want to do it, when you want to do it, you know, any time before bed, in the car, you know, in the park. I think they're the main things. Just keep it fun and really enjoyable.
That's a lovely idea. You just kind of maybe take a book, go to the park, if the weather's nice, and just read a book and then get on with the kind of climbing and running around.
Yeah, well, I think for Book Trust that reading for pleasure element is really important. For us it's not about learning to read in itself, the functional skills and the attainment linked to education. It is, you know, reading for pleasure opens up your imagination. You can learn about the world through books. It just creatively and culturally gives you so much. It, you know, has the power to change your life. So I think embedding it in your child's life, you know, just as a family, even discussing stories around the dinner table, is really the way to go.
Claire, evening. You know, it's interesting that you're talking about the difference of reading to your children as opposed to helping them attain skills to read for themselves one day, because I think sometimes the reading to your children can get lost with the pressure, you know, in education these days. But I was just having a look and it says that your Book Trust has announced its top 100 books.
That's right.
Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, well, as you said, Children's Book Week is this week, so all week, and that's a promotion that's been running for sort of 90 years now. So really it's just a chance for us to focus every year on that sort of national celebration of books. Books for all ages, all different types of books, all different formats of books now, and really just, you know, have a national conversation about books. Mm. So for us this year, we've drawn up a list of our top 100 books from the last 100 years. They range from 0 to 14 years. And we're encouraging everyone to get involved in the debate. Obviously, there are many books that we couldn't include that we would have liked to have included. We had some tough discussions, some tough decisions. So we're urging everyone to go onto the Book Trust website and vote for your favourite. And we're going to be announcing the absolute favourite children's books on the 25th of November.
Can you give us an idea of, will we know most of the books that are up in the list so far?
Yes, I think so. And I think actually that's part of the fun, because those real classic books have stuck with us. So even as adults, we recognise them. So, you know, real favourites like The Snowman by Raymond Briggs, which is a sort of, you know, always popular every Christmas, through to Dear Zoo, Where's Spot, Dogger, these really famous iconic picture books that we all know and love. And then I think parents naturally return to them with their own children because they're familiar, and the stories, they have great stories at their heart. And I think that's what's really important in this list. That's one of the things we tried to choose, just really good page turners that children would get lost in. I think as you get up to the older end of the list, what we noticed for the sort of 12 to 14-year-olds, is there are a lot more newer titles, so things that have been much more recently published. And I think that's interesting because it highlights that, you know, books now are being published very specifically for that age group. You know, they deal with real issues, and I think that's lovely that, you know, children can see themselves in that modern setting, can recognise themselves. And so there's a real range, and I think the list has something for everyone. So it's a starting point, a jumping off point, really, but we think there is something for everyone to enjoy on that list.
Have you actually read all of the books, just out of interest, Claire?
I have.
Well, you have?
Well, yes, and there was a panel of five of us that drew up the list. So obviously many of the books we had already read, but we enjoyed revisiting things. And then there were some gaps that we did have to sort of, you know, call in and read through. So it was quite a long task. You know, it took us quite a while, but it was absolutely great, great fun.
Mm, great job. So can I be a bit cheeky and ask you, what's the story when Hitler stole Pink Rabbit by Judith Kerr?
It's not actually on the list at the moment. That hasn't made it, unfortunately.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that was one of the ones that hasn't made it. And I think other things that, you know, there are other books that people will be surprised aren't on the list. So something that's really popular is Julia Donaldson's The Gruffalo.
Mm.
And we've deliberately gone with a different title by Julia Donaldson, former Children's Laureate. So we've gone with Room on the Broom, which is another great, you know, a great page-turner. So what we've tried to do is really pick those classics, but also use the list to show off books. It's an opportunity to bring new books to people's attention. So I think that's quite exciting as well.
And can I just ask you, what's your view on a book, you know, that is printed on paper as opposed to reading it on a Kindle?
Well, I think for us, we're all about choice. And it's really, you know, if a digital version is the way that a child wants to go, whether it is a Kindle or another e-reader or a tablet, as opposed to a printed book, that's absolutely fine for us. We're not prescriptive at all.
Okay.
We just want kids to enjoy reading.
Yeah.
Kids are, you know, so au fait with screens these days. So really for us, it's not about the format. It's just about enjoying the great stories and sort of thinking about what it can do for you and your imagination, opening up your life opportunities.
And Claire, you know, you said earlier on, we were talking about when to read, what optimal times to read, and you said, you know, don't, it's obviously not just necessarily tied to bedtime, but can I pin you down on that? Like, everybody wants to make reading fun, but can you tell us, give us some examples of parents, you know, spoon feed us, tell us what we can do to make it fun?
Well, I think one of the key things that you can do is join the library, and that sounds really obvious. But actually, a lot of people don't belong to their library. They maybe don't have a library card. But community libraries now are fantastic resources for fun activities as well as loaning books, particularly if, you know, money is tight in the family as well. Great opportunities, wealth of knowledge with librarians as well. And I think a sort of, you know, weekly trip or fortnightly trip to the library should be an occasion, a real sense of something, you know, special. And something that all the family can enjoy as well. I think also it's really important that reading isn't too prescriptive. So it doesn't matter if you're reading to your child or your child is perhaps making up the story from the pictures and telling you their own version of the story. Perhaps, you know, you want to act something out or do funny voices. It really doesn't matter. And I think that's the key thing for parents. Sometimes they lack confidence. Everyone's tired at the end of the day, perhaps. It's just about short, sharp, keep it fun, keep it light, really just, you know, enjoying that time together. It can be really important sort of family bonding time, and I think that's really lovely.
Claire, thank you so much. You know, so many of the things you're saying seem such kind of, you know, without being cheeky, obvious, but yeah, we need to be reminded of those, don't we, I think, because
absolutely.
Life is so busy.
Yes, and I mean, there's plenty of other guidance and also resources for teachers, librarians, yeah, parents, lots of different types of book recommendations as well for all age groups on the Book Trust website. So I'd encourage anyone to go on and have a look.
Can you give us a few pointers of it? Because it's I've had a look at your website. I love it. I think it's fantastic. And I think every parent should have a flick through it because there's so many valuable bits of information in there. But can you tell us a little bit about what your favourite bits of the website are, where you'd point our guests?
Well, I think for us, there are, as I said, lots of different resources. So we have a resource finder and you can search the resources. So you can sort of say, I'm a parent and I have a child who's 5 years old, and you will bring up lots of different things for you. But I think also one thing that I like, which links to Children's Book Week, is the sort of promotional end. So the idea that the very best books are celebrated each year through a range of book prizes. So at the moment what we're working on is the Blue Peter Book Award and the Roald Dahl Funny Prize, and they celebrate the very best book published in the last year. So they're just for really easy, quick tips of great books for your children. It's all there for you. You know, the work is done. Obviously, I think parents now have so much choice. But actually going on and browsing the books yourself and with your child can be a really fun activity. And then, of course, you can go to the library, you can go to your local bookseller, you know, and find them and make it a real treat, I think. That's the key.
Great stuff, Claire. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Claire.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Listen online at radioverulam.com.
Welcome back to The Parent Show on Radio Verulam 92.6 FM. Your place, your voice, your music. Our second guest is our wonderful Shirley Heyman, who's sitting opposite me now, because Shirley is an early years expert and she's a mom all in one. You're wearing two hats at the same time, Shirley. And I know, I have to say, if I had any questions about reading to or with my children, you'd be the first person I'd come to. So this is a great opportunity for all our listeners to get the value of your knowledge as well.
Thank you, Lydia.
But so tell us, now, if you were starting a four-year-old or a child who was just starting their reading journey, and if you wanted to create the most perfect situation for them, what would you do from scratch?
Well, I was thinking about this today, and actually the first thing I wanted to say is, you know, don't wait till they're four. Reading starts when that baby actually is even inside you. You know, you can be reading, the baby's hearing your voice and the intonation. But as soon as that baby's out, you know, and when they're lying in your arms, lying on the floor with you in the cot, you can be showing them large, you know, big pictures, even just black and white images, but big, bold pictures, and just tell them a story. You don't have to read a story. Let's go back to those days when, you know, grandparents used to make stories up that I remember. I don't know about you, Lydia, but it doesn't have to be a book to start with. Just make a story up. Make the story up about people that are in the family and you know, places that you go. And as that baby turns into a toddler, you'll find that they're going to really sort of key into hearing that rhythm and rhyme and intonation of the spoken narrative in their own, you know, first language, mother tongue. And that's going to help them as they move into their sort of early experiences of reading. So yeah, don't wait till they're four, really. What else? Starting that reading journey. I mean, if we're thinking something a bit more, you know, formal, then I guess a lot of us parents are going to be thinking about synthetic phonics.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, exactly. We hear that in the press
the
all the time. And all it really means is that we're teaching them the sound, not the letter name. So parents, if you're going to do some reading, you know, early, trying to get children to decode the English print, teach them B-A-T-S, the phonic sound. Don't teach them ABC, because eventually they're going to need to learn those phonic sounds at school. So that's one thing I'd say, Lydia, I guess.
So let them watch Alpha Blocks until it comes out their ears.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. I don't know what that is now, because my daughter's just about can read at 18 or 17. Yeah. But yeah, it's that phonic stuff.
It's all phonics. Yeah, it's all little letters that kind of jump around the place. But that's good to know. So Alpha Blocks, okay. So other ways of kind of learning the ABC no good? Get the phonics out there.
Well, that's what all the schools are doing these days. And, you know, times move on and change. But at the moment, my experience of teaching in schools and teaching children is we're going to be doing something called synthetic phonics. Or if you want to go into somewhere like, am I allowed to say Smith's, you know, a bookshop, then you look for Jolly Phonics. And that's, everybody seems to know about that. Do you know, actually, I just discovered yesterday that Jolly Phonics came out of the spelling trial in the 50s and 60s called ITA. So
that's really interesting.
Yeah, you know, and because everyone sort of speaks poorly and sadly about ITA and people that can't spell these days because they went through that trial in Britain. But actually, Jolly Phonics, which is what we're all using now, came from that.
So those, so, all those guinea pigs that, that went through it years ago, it was worth it.
Well, our no, it's been tweaked.
Yeah.
But so that's where, you know, we're learning about the sound. So that's one thing. Don't wait till they're four. And just like Claire was telling us, Lydia, I think modelling reading to children is so important. So, you know, mums, dads, nannies, granddads, model reading novels, recipes, shopping lists, newspapers, notices, supermarket names, road names, car manuals, anything. Children need to see people that they trust and know reading. Okay, so they need to realise that actually it's something they need to do and that indeed they want to do because it's pleasurable. So modelling it.
Brilliant. And what about environments? I mean, you know, like I'm in the same, my son's in reception, you know, the books are coming home.
Mm.
What, how do you begin to start? Like, I know some people start off with the books with no words at the bottom. I mean, what do you do with those? Is it, you kind of go, do you ask questions? Do you let them tell you what they're all about? How do you approach those books?
Again, you know, let's just be clear what we talked about, you and I, at the beginning, about the difference between reading to children and then trying to get children to develop skills to decode the print themselves. So the reading to children is the vital thing. And that's what I think Claire was saying as well. Yeah. We want children to enjoy reading, seeing it as a pleasurable thing. And actually, you know, how many adults now are in book groups around Hertfordshire? I know certainly my sister-in-law, Sarah, does it every month and she's passionate about it. So, you know, we want these children to grow into adults that love reading. Yeah, if they come home with books with no words, then see if they can tell you the story. But if they can't, don't put any pressure on them. You know, you model a story to them first. If you don't know the characters' names in the reading scheme, doesn't matter. Make something up. The fact is, we go back to what I said, you know, you're starting to help the child understand how a story is made up. So they're hearing intonation and rhyme and rhythm and they just get the idea about what a story is. So do that with them, first of all.
That's fantastic. I mean, that's really solid advice. And are you a fan of reading straight when they come home from school, just before bed? I mean, I'm talking about them reading to you, because there are two different things. Obviously, they don't require the same amount of concentration if you're reading to them. But for them to read to you, you know, it's a different story, isn't it?
It's a tricky one. And I think it's different for every family, like we often say on this show, Lydia, and every child. Yeah. You've just got to gauge, you know, if they're tired and exhausted, don't worry.
Yeah.
If they're really keen and some of them run out and they pull their book out of their book bag, you know, in the playground, then, you know, maybe you sit and do it in the car straight away if that's feasible.
Yeah.
So, you know, gauge your own child's interest and motivation. But please, please, mums and dads and nannies and granddads, don't force it on them. You know, and like Claire was saying before, every day is ideal if you can do a little bit of reading every day. Otherwise, it could be a bedtime routine when they're nice and snuggly in bed. It could be at the breakfast table. I used to see parents reading to their children when they're waiting in the school car park in the morning. But whenever you do it, can you show that you value the activity? Okay, so if you're actually looking at your phone and, you know, checking your watch and brushing your hair and putting your lipstick on, the child's saying, actually, mummy's not really interested in what I'm doing.
I completely agree. If they pick up that it's a chore for mum and dad, it's going to become a chore for them, isn't it?
Yeah.
So you've just got to keep it upbeat and put a smile on your face. And you're going to have to do it anyway, so you might as well do it with the spring in your step, if you like.
Yeah. And it's only, you know, 4 or 5 minutes a day is better than an hour one day and nothing for a week.
Yeah.
Just, you know, exactly what Claire was saying. You know, short, sharp, interesting, kind of happy experience, really. But I know that's hard. I've been through it. Some days you just don't feel like doing it. Yeah. Don't do it.
Yeah, Yeah. I suppose if you strive to get 5 out of 7, that must be quite good.
5 out of 7 is amazing.
Yeah, great. Yeah. Well, there you go. Yeah. There's the bars there. And if you've got 2 children and they're different stages of reading, and one is learning to read, the other can't, or one can read proficiently and the other can't, you know, how do you balance it? Because you obviously don't want to be doing 3 different bedtime routines to 3 different children, or 4 or 5 or whatever you have. What would you suggest?
Well, I mean, you know, like anything, if you've only got 1 pair of hands or 1, you know, pair of ears, then maybe, I don't know, ask nanny or granddad to help, or a special person in the child's life. Maybe they can do 1 child and you do the other. Maybe you get the older sibling to hear the younger one read. Even if the older sibling isn't that an accomplished reader as yet, it's still, you know, it's a relationship thing, isn't it? Bonding. And I often used to have, when I was a teacher, the older sibling would have written in the younger person's reading record book, a little note. So there, they were doing some writing for a purpose.
Yeah.
But they were getting involved in it. The other thing you can do, again, you know, Claire and I are really singing from the same hymn sheet, is just ask them to tell you about their book. So you're driving along, you can't look at the book with them, but you could be saying, Lydia, couldn't you? Hey, Archie, what did it say in your book? Do you remember? And what happened? And when did she, you know, when did the lady do that? And so you don't actually have to have the book in front of you. You're still getting the child to think about the storyline, the characters, and get them to predict, you know, what might happen next. Yeah, you know, again, time-pressured society we live in, so sometimes just accept you can't do it all the time.
Yeah, that's great. That's really, that's a great hint, especially for not keeping it solidly, you know, at bedtime. So, like, refer to it outside of it. So it's not just a one-dimensional thing. Books can be part of any part
exactly,
of your day.
Exactly, yeah.
Which I like the idea of that. And audiobooks must be a good thing as well. Then.
Yep, absolutely. And again, you can play them in the car. Lots of children, I guess, are happy to wear headphones these days. They see so many of us adults doing it. You know, you could download a book, couldn't you, on your phone, and let the child listen to it if you're on the, I don't know, does anyone go on a bus? I hope so. On a train, or, yeah, there's so many ways of doing it. But I think what we want to avoid is that we're saying to children that reading is something on our tick list. So we've done your reading, tick, good, move on.
Yeah.
Actually, we're not doing reading, we're experiencing reading. We're enjoying the printed word.
Brilliant. That's fantastic, Shirley. Now, I because I'm in an early years frame of mind with my 2, I find it hard to think past early years. But is there, like, if our children are fluently reading, is that it? Is our job done? Do we not have to read to them anymore?
I think, you know, helping the children to learn to decipher the English language, then yeah, that's a job. That is a job, isn't it, for the teacher, the parent, the family. And that's the kind of job, I think, once they get to a certain level, we can put a tick by, actually, Lydia, and say they've done that, they can decode. But for modelling reading and sharing the joy and the excitement of a story, I think that just continues. You know, again, go back to those adult book groups. I don't think we can just say it's done. You know, reading should become, hopefully, can become part of the kind of family way of being. So, you know, you go on holiday, and remember when we had Elaine on, a voice, she talked to us about holiday activities, about reading a chapter per night, didn't she? Do you remember? We both loved that.
It was a brilliant idea, and we copied her, and it did exactly the effect that she said. It was like a chapter a night, so that it creates exactly the effect you were talking about, where you might refer to it during the day because you don't know, it's not complete, you don't know what's going to happen,
except
you know, you're thinking about it during the day. So it's a great tip.
And then the only thing I was thinking also about that was that if you've got very able readers at an early age, you know, there's another element that kicks in, Lydia, and that's that we can't always find texts that are appropriate for them. So they're able to read at a level maybe higher than some of their peers, you know, than maybe their teachers would be expecting, and they're keen and they want to read, and we want to encourage that. But you know, where do we find the right material for them? And maybe that's somewhere where, you know, the Book Trust can help, or we do a bit of Google search. But be careful about that. So that's part of your job as a parent as well, finding, matching the text and the storyline to the ability of your child to decode and understand. So, yeah, and don't forget as well, there's a big difference between being able to decode the print and actually get enjoyment from from the print.
Now, can you explain that a little bit better? Because I've heard that before, but can you expand on it, please?
Yeah, so some children are really good with symbols, so they understand that the letter shape A makes the sound A, and they learn to blend all those sounds together and they can read. And you think they're reading, but actually if you go back and you say to them, so, you know, why did the snowman melt on that sunny day? They haven't even realised that it was sunny or that there was a snowman. You know, they just have decoded it, like you and I maybe reading, I don't know, could you read Portuguese?
Not at all.
No, nor could I. But maybe we could learn to decode it, yes. But we wouldn't have a clue what it was about. So you must check for meaning, okay? So don't just push your child on to the next level. Make sure they're understanding. And that's why we need to read to our children as well as help them to learn to decode. So they understand what it is they're aiming for.
That makes so much sense. So, I mean, I suppose when you're reading to them, the pressure's off. They can absorb the story a little more. But when they're reading themselves, so much of their energy must be expended in just understand, and like just kind of figuring out what they're saying.
Yeah, decoding the code. You know, it can be exhausting. And I think that's a sign to look for. If you think your child's quite able orally and they're switched on, they know what's going on, but they just somehow are struggling with reading and they find it exhausting, it could be a little sign to you that they're having problems, you know, either visually, I'm not saying that of course they'd have dyslexia, but you need to just watch out for things like that. Some children will learn to read, Lydia, no matter what we do. Other children need some, you know, good synthetic phonic training, but if it's not happening, there's probably a reason why.
And what's your first port of call, would you say, Shirley?
Well, obviously, I think your class, your teacher, your child's teacher, all teachers are trained to teach children to read, especially these days with the government's agenda, I would say. Often, I don't know, grandparents often pick it up quite quickly as well, that things aren't, you know,
really.
if they know the grandchildren well. But if you've modelled a really positive reading environment to your child and, you know, at 8, 9, they're really struggling, then I think, you know, you need to be investigating that.
Right. Great. Now, Shirley, what can you do if your child is really just not interested in reading?
I think I would be asking myself why. Why is my child not interested? If I've modelled it, you know, if I haven't modelled it, then maybe they're not seeing it anywhere really, and only at school in a slightly more formal context. So, ask why. Don't force them to read. Think about what I just said. You know, is there a difficulty there? Is that why they're not interested? Because it's so exhausting for them. You know, maybe the letters are jumping around on the page for them and they just can't work out how to decode this code. Change the material. Maybe you haven't got the right reading material. I have to say my experience is that boys tend to prefer factual books, things about transport or dinosaurs, superheroes at kind of, you know, when they're starting off reading. And logical children really love instruction manuals. It doesn't matter what you're reading, as long as you're reading and you're enjoying it and it has a purpose for you. There's children who have passions about things. So I can think of somebody I know very well, and she loves horses, and all she reads is books and magazines about horses. Yeah. And that was frustrating because I don't particularly love horses.
Yeah.
But yes, my daughter just reads about horses.
So you've got to tune in.
You've got to tune into the individual child.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Brilliant, Shirley. Lovely. Great, great advice. Now, we were asking our listeners what their favourite books are. And Rachel Moon wrote in and said her favourite book is Little House on the Prairie.
Oh, I loved that.
I absolutely love it. In fact, I have an image of one of it. I remember one time it was snowing so heavily and the girls opened their bedroom window and the snow had come up to their window. Aww. I remember there was one part and I said, great books. Catherine Rumsey says David Walliams, Gangster Granny, Mr. Stink and Billionaire Boy. Thank you very much for that. Any other comments? Any other thoughts? Your favourite book, Shirley?
Mine has always been Cat in the Hat, Dr. Seuss.
Love it.
Because I love the rhyming and I just found it so easy to remember it, you know, without the words in front of me.
How do you deal with Fox and Socks?
Yeah, that's okay.
Really, I found that quite a tongue twister. Wow. Welcome back to The Parent Show on Radio Verulam 92.6 FM. Now, we're talking all about books and we've been getting all sorts of perspectives. And one that we think is important, Shirley, it was your idea to get a local author on who writes children's books. So we're very pleased to have Dawn Finch joining us from St Albans. Dawn, how are you?
Hi there, I'm fine, thank you. Lovely to talk to you.
You too. You have a fantastic bunch of titles. You're a children's librarian, a literacy consultant, and you're the vice chair of the school libraries group, and you've just written a children's book, Brotherhood of Shades.
I have, yes, and I obviously don't get much fun time.
Do you? You probably don't get to read to your kids at all with all those things.
Well, mine is quite grown now. Mine's 20. My daughter's 20 and at university. I think I have to read down the phone. We probably read more text messages now than
I think. I think you're off the hook. You've done your bit. So, Dawn, tell us a little bit about Brotherhood of Shades.
Well, Brotherhood of Shades is a contemporary ghost story. So the central character is a boy called Adam, who, after he dies, comes back as a ghost for a secret organisation of ghosts. They're kind of like a spectral MI5, that kind of thing.
Mm.
And what they do is they keep an eye on the passage of other ghosts, and they deal with hauntings, and they take care of this vast library of arcane knowledge. So, and it all, it's all set in London, so there's lots of sort of chases around London and lots of London locations in the book.
Great stuff. And so you've just published it. And is it your first book, Dawn?
It is, yeah. It is my first one, yeah.
And what inspired you to write a children's book?
Well, I think I've... for the last 10 years, I've specialised in working in children's books and children's libraries. And I read thousands of children's books, obviously, as part of my work. And it just occurred to me that they're so wonderful. It's such a wonderful world. And I think if ever anyone is asked what's the most memorable book they've ever read, it's always something they read in their childhood. And I just thought that it's just such a wonderful thing to be part of. It's just so important. Children's literature is so important. And children are so much more demanding in their reading material as well. It's very difficult to write. I think I like the complexity of it. So... And there's just that more open enthusiasm to children's literature than adults. I think maybe I never grew up properly myself. I'm just a big kid.
That's fine. Dawn, do you think the libraries locally, you know, in St Albans, Harpenden, etc., are they well used still?
I think they're very well used. The trouble is that the hours have become so complicated with so many libraries being cut.
Yeah.
And we still don't have this requirement for schools to have a statutory requirement to have libraries. And so I think that there's a serious opportunity that we could be tackling this literacy issue just by focusing more on the availability of libraries. And not just the availability of libraries, of qualified librarians, of people with the knowledge and experience and passion to run the libraries. I think that's really how we need to be addressing literacy issues in this country.
And libraries these days, so I have to admit, I haven't been in with a little person for a long time, but, you know, are they more sort of child-friendly? Do they have beanbags on the floor, and do they have... you know, sort of sessions where children can come in still.
Yeah. I mean, there's, you know, all libraries will have a story time. There's the fantastic summer reading activities during the summer holidays, but there's reading activities in libraries going on all the time. And, of course, this access to constant free material. So, free, you know, we pay for it in our taxes.
Right.
And so people having this, children having access to an infinite amount of material, it's expensive buying lots of books, and especially for young readers when they haven't found their genre and they haven't found the books that really inspire them, they need to be able to choose lots and lots of different types of material, and there's only one way they can successfully have access to that, and that's in a library, that's in a library of some form.
In your role then as a librarian, would you take, you know, if a particular family came in and a child was struggling, would you be able to take time to go and help that child explore the library a bit, or is that asking
absolutely.
A bit much?
And I think that's the passion of people who are working in libraries.
Yeah.
It's having that experience. So, I mean, I'm asked a lot to recommend books for particular children.
Ah.
I always say that without meeting the child, I couldn't possibly do that, because we all have different tastes and children are no different. And so one of the first things I would always ask was, you know, what sort of TV program do they like? What hobbies do they have?
Okay.
What sort of music do they like? And then you can actually lead them towards a book that's going to suit and inspire them, or a type of book that's going to suit and inspire them. And, you know, that they will keep on going and reading throughout their lives. I think that's so important. Reading is habit forming. if we can start that habit in people young, then it becomes just a part of their life that they can't imagine living without.
That's really all we want to be. That's the overwhelming message we're getting on the show this evening. It's like, start young, get a routine as soon as possible. But by the same token, the routine doesn't mean you have to be stuck to the same time every day. Make books a part of any potential hour of any day. And I love that idea. I love the idea of, you know, taking the book bag to the park straight after school and just having a quick read through it, you know, and just, you know, touch and hold a book in it, just a completely different context.
Absolutely. And I really think that it should always be seen as a leisure thing, a pleasure thing. It shouldn't, I think once we start to assign so many rules to it, like you should read this book and you should read three chapters before bed and you should have 20 minutes of reading, once we make it that prescriptive, we alienate the sense of reading for pleasure. And that's where we really need to be. We need reading, and it doesn't necessarily matter in which form. If it's printed or electronic, it doesn't matter. It's the words, it's the story that really counts. And lives can be improved, you know, immeasurably by reading a lot more. You know, it's this huge, vast expanse of knowledge that's there just for the taking. And I think if we can get it into our lives that people just, you know, you have it as a pleasure. I mean, we all do it. We sort of read on holiday or we read on trains. But children's lives are so very full. Their homework, every club, every after-school activity. So we really need to be finding a way of making time for reading for pleasure.
Great stuff. Thank you so much, Dawn, for joining us this evening. And we'll be posting up a bit of information about your latest book.
Thank you so much, Dawn.
Thank you. Absolute pleasure. Lovely to talk to you.
Okay. You too. All the best. Bye-bye.
Neave Solicitors are proud to sponsor The Parent Show. The friendly team at Neave's includes specialists who can guide you through all the legal ups and downs of family life. Visit neavesolicitors.co.uk. Neave Solicitors, your complete legal solution.